Hello, this is a recording for LIS 483. My name is Karen Bingham. I interviewed Johanna, who is a middle school librarian in Billings, Montana. She's had experience with challenged books and what to do when that happens, and I wanted to share that interview with you. It's about an hour long. Enjoy.
It probably was one of the best professional things that I've gone through, and I say that not lightly. I mean, it was a very, very hard thing, and there still is a lingering sense of interesting. The way things turned out was interesting because the person, you know, that brought that challenge ran and won a seat on the school board.
Yes.
And then my husband,
yes,
who was irritated at all the name calling and all the stuff that I went through, he ran for the school board and is also on the school board. And so I always say I continue to live in interesting times, and I never forget that I went through that and I could go through that at any time again. So it's made me much more cognizant. I don't ever do book selection. You know, sometimes the temptation is to do it kind of lightly with not as much thought because you're busy doing other things. I am very mindful of that now, and I always, if there's even the slightest hint of that something might be controversial, I, in my own mind, have gone through the thought process of why do we want this book for our library, what are the benefits, what are the pros, what are the cons, what are possible, you know, what are possible areas that people might find offensive, and why do I think the good outweighs the bad. And then, you know, I do go ahead and purchase. There were three books this past spring, wonderful, wonderful books, mm-hmm, on teens, but they were, I can't think of the names. They're so new. Two of them were, they were photo essays of teens in America. And talk about depth and breadth. There were lesbian couples, there were gay couples, there were gang members, there, mm-hmm, were kids, there were Hutterite kids, uh-huh, there were, you know, and it was from all across America, the age range probably from 12 to 18, and
it's a beautiful book, right?
The stories portrayed were in the kids' voices, uh-huh. I mean, they wrote their own piece, and what an awesome, awesome book. But there was some nudity. There was one. There was a 16-year-old nudist. I was like, oh, man. I hadn't seen that part. And I thought, oh, this could be. But I said, no, it really is. This is nonfiction. This is reality. And what I did just, and I don't know if this would work for every administrator, but with Mike, mm-hmm, I showed him there were three books, and I showed him the two books were photo essays of teens, and the one book was a female, all kinds of questions, and I don't know the name, I can't think of
body
it.
Drama.
I'll send you the titles, but I'll look online and get the names of those books, but it was a woman's health book, but it was extremely explicit. I mean, everything about it. They had a whole page of what does a normal vulva look like. I mean,
yes,
pictures.
Yes,
and what do normal breasts look like, and what happens if this, you know, and if I were to notice a bump on my vagina, all of this stuff, and it is the perfect book because girls want to know what's normal.
Right.
If it isn't normal, you know, should I go see a doctor? Who should I? And so I showed the school nurse, and I felt funny, so I got distracted. But what I started to say was, with my administrator, I showed him the books, and I just typed up a rationale, and I said, this is why I think these are, I wasn't asking his permission.
Uh-huh.
I was just telling him, these are the choices I've made, and this is why I think they should be included. And I just wanted him to be aware, in case down the road there's potential, and I saved all that paperwork, yep. his response back. Mike is very open-minded that way. He's very good about, you know, he knows that teens are, and preteens are, they're a wild and very, a wide and varied bunch of people.
Yes.
And he has no problem with providing information for all of our kids.
Good. Good. Johanna, I think the book that you're talking about, the girls' book, is called Body Drama.
Yes, it is. That's the one.
We're reading that in my class this week, actually. And that's one of the books that we're, because this week's theme is controversy, and that is certainly one of the books. It's so interesting because it's not a titillating book whatsoever, but
it is not.
Very graphic with the photos.
Exactly. And, you know, I guess the two people that were most excited about having that book, and I just have it in our reference section,
mm-hmm.
and as any book, if I get the sense that certainly a young man, I would be very hesitant without some serious discussion and probably even permission from a parent.
Mm-hmm.
There would be no reason for a young man to look at that book. But a girl, sure, I have no problem with it. And the people that were really excited to see that book was Carol Blank, our school nurse,
yeah.
and our guidance counselor, because these are the kinds of things that kids, you know, they ask about all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they might not ask me, but you need to be able to deal with their questions in an honest and respectful manner.
Yes.
But it's not for the faint heart.
No, it's not.
I learned things. I went, oh, didn't know that. Know it now.
Me too.
You know, and when you have a person that's been married 30 years, and it's pretty, you know, I thought I was pretty into, but, oh, well, that's kind of interesting.
I felt the same way reading it. There were some things I looked at it and I thought, really? I'll be darned.
Yeah. So I said, and, you know, I did have to say I read it. I took it home and read it because that's not something I was going to read at the counter and go, oh, well, good to know. I think, you know, and it's just one of those things. I certainly grew up in a different era than now. But there are so many of our young women that are so, they have so much more life experience. I guess they have, I call it, they have more body experience, but they don't have more brain experience, and it leads for some unfortunate choices and some interesting actions on their part, and
mm-hmm.
A lot of drama, a lot of problems that they get themselves into, and they don't know how to deal with it,
yep.
they need help.
Yes. Yes. You said that just perfectly. I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah. You know, they just, you know, sometimes it's like they don't have a concept of what it is to have self-respect. They
mm-hmm.
don't understand that they're more than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
They, yeah, you know, that's a pretty big thing for a person to think that they're only, you know, that their self-worth is in the size of their breasts or whatever it is that they're thinking. They just, I guess that sums up pretty well. They don't know that they have value beyond some of their parts.
Which is so sad, and yet another reason why a book like Body Drama is a great tool, great to have.
Yeah. Yep.
I think.
So anyway, that was my, but you know, I'm very cognizant of that. I knew that those books were very on the line, and I know at some point some parent will likely find offense, but I have carefully thought out why I've included it, and you know, it really did fit. I every year I do a collection analysis. I look at the collection as a whole, and it fit. We needed books in that area
mm-hmm.
of nonfiction, and so there we went.
Good. So tell me just a little bit about, it's so interesting that you're talking about body drama, because as I was reading it, it reminded me of the guy book.
Yeah.
With sans pictures, but content-wise, very similar. Tell me, can you tell us from the beginning, me, myself, and I, what your experience was, how the challenge started and going through it and how it ended. Would you mind doing that?
Well, okay, it's kind of a long story, but I'll see if I can hit the highlights. You know, when I bought the guidebook, and this was a number of years ago now, I first bought a copy of that book, I think in 1998. It was, I hadn't worked, you know, I had been in a library position very long, but when I found the book, I checked. It was very well reviewed. I actually had my third grade teacher friend, Judy, read the book, and she. I had a couple other teachers look at it, and they said, "You know, yeah, it's pretty explicit," but they thought, and so I said, "You know, I'm of the same opinion. I think it has a lot of valuable information. It's not. There are a lot of books on." Puberty for girls. We didn't have anything comparable for young men. And so I made the decision to buy the book, and there was enough interest that I actually bought a second copy some months later. Well, and then lo and behold, many years pass, and we have a young girl that she was a sixth grader? Yeah, I think she was a sixth grader at the time. She checked out some urban legend books, and they were books that had been in the library again for, well, the one book had been in the library for some 20 years.
Wow.
And, you know, it was well before my time, and one of the books was one that I had gotten in, you know, it was urban legends. I can't. It was a big, thick book. It was probably 800 pages. I hadn't read the whole book. But you know, they were urban legends. Again, it was a book that had been well reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't give it a great deal of thought. I mean, I didn't. I didn't read the table of contents, or you know, it was an urban legend book. We didn't have very many of those. I had gotten a couple because they were very popular with the kids. Well, as it happens, the mother always said she was reading with her daughter. I heard from one of the kids that was involved, no, that's not how it happened. This girl had a friend over spending the night. And they were looking at the book, and they discovered some what they considered naughty parts, and of the book, and kind of made a big deal. The little girl that was spending the night went home, told her mom. Her mom called the sixth grader's mother and said, "You know, are you aware that your daughter's reading this?" Well, at that point, then mom and the little girl sat down and they read it. And, you know, frankly, there were some parts in the book. There was a section on the book, unbeknownst to me, on sexual urban legends. that really was not appropriate for middle school age kids. I mean, there are other books out there that fit the same need, but they just didn't, you know, they didn't have that particular content. And, well, I guess kind of a long story short, the mother was, she started, "I want this book removed," but what she did was, it was like Halloween or thereabouts. No, it's earlier than that. It was early October. It would have been just before the second Tuesday of October, because it was the day she came in, two parents came in, and they asked if they could look around the library and said, sure. I said, you know, I had some classes in, and we actually had the lights off, but the parents started looking at the books. And I didn't think anything of it. There was some conversation. We just want to see what our kids are, you know, our kids' libraries like. Didn't think anything of it. Well, that night at the school board meeting, she had copied excerpts from the book, and it was, of course, the most titillating parts, the most obscene parts that she could find, and she read it out loud to the school board. Well, the school board was outraged.
Oh.
And I was just like, okay, they wanted the books removed, blah, blah, blah. Well, I had some discussions at that point with the superintendent, and our school board policy says that if a book does not meet curricular expectations, the superintendent has the right to remove it from the collection. So I told the school board, or I told the superintendent, I said, I will not remove the book. The book has merit. I guess there are some parts that are not for mature readers, and I regret that this little girl found it. I wish, you know, she had talked to me, or her parents would have talked to me. Sadly, they, at that point, since they had, they kind of went for the drama, for the big emotional buttons, mm-hmm. and it was already kind of a problem by the next day. School board members were calling the principals, and parents were getting involved, and so I told the superintendent that if she wanted it removed, if she would put the request in writing as per our school policy,
mm-hmm.
I would follow school policy, and indeed she did. And there were, in fact, two books. There was one, several of our urban legend books were not found to be offensive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them were. One had been in our libraries, like I said, for, well, I don't know, 20 some years before I had been there. It was an older, well-read book, by the way. Had I looked through the book, I saw the juicy parts had been kind of lightly marked in pencil. Never noticed that about this particular book before. So at that point, you know, and frankly, the mistake in that was the superintendent was trying, everybody was trying to be accommodating, and we did not follow our other policy for reconsideration. Basically, they skipped that whole step of having read the book with all the drama and stuff. It was just kind of, but I could understand, like, you know, there were other books that were better that fit our needs, that were more age appropriate. And so I was directed by the superintendent to remove the books, and that's what I did. Well, that kind of added fuel to, it sent the wrong message mm-hmm. to the community. It's like, well, if you don't like a book, all you need to do is make a big stink, and the book will go away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this family are very, fundamentals of evangelical folk,
mm-hmm.
not any, they are, I guess, very, fairly rigid in thinking. I have no problem with their moral stance. I mean, I guess some of the stuff later on that happened, all the name calling and pointing fingers, I was raised in an era that I'm more similar than them. Than different, and that was not, you know,
right.
The name calling that went on later on was unfortunate, especially since it was in the media.
Yes,
but so that I thought that, you know, that incident was kind of was taken care of. We followed. I did what the superintendent wanted. I thought it was done and over with. Well, our rules had always been that parents always welcome in our school with any time as long as they sign in. So I had, it wasn't very long after that, this woman, Becky, wanted to look at some of the other books, and so she came in and started looking at books, and one time she and another school board member, or she wasn't on the school board at that time, she and a school board member came in and were looking at books, and they found the guidebook. And the man in particular, Thomas, was incensed. He was so upset by the content of the book, he literally flipped it over on the table, and his question to me was, how do we get rid of this book? And I looked at him, I said, we have a reconsideration process. You start with that. You know, he was a board member. He didn't even know that there were steps to be followed. And so I printed off the sheets, the reconsideration form for him, because that's what they wanted. And I think since he was on school board, he let Becky take the lead on that. And she wrote a letter to the to Eileen. And Eileen at that time reviewed the book. Eileen being the superintendent, she reviewed the book and thought that the content was acceptable. So she declined to have the book removed from the collection. There was a public hearing and some public comment. Eileen said no, and so the next step in our process is they appealed it to the board, to the school board, and so there was another, like, hearing, mm-hmm. and lots of interviews in the paper, during which time I was called a pornographer and some other very, very untrue, you know, I was purveyor of pornography.
Oh, my goodness.
My professional judgment and choices were called into question in a most unflattering, light. And, you know, that's one thing. One of the things I learned is, somebody can mean something to be hurtful, but you don't have to take it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such a, this whole process was such a, it was such a public, it was, I'm kind of a private person. I'm not a person that's out for rah-rah, you know, to have people come up to me on the street when they found out what my job was and talk to me like, oh, well, you know, what do you, and it was, the notoriety was a little hard to take, and the fact that my intentions were called into question and my judgment was called into question, that was a little hard to take. But it was very good because, you know, all my life, that's one thing that I really had to work with is people would say, well, you know, you need to develop a thicker skin. And as long as you have a good heart, I think sometimes a thick skin is beneficial. And that was, it forced me to do that. And I don't regret that. There was a lot of benefit to that. Needless to say, after a lot of, it got very ugly. It played out in the paper. There was a radio interview that played. After all of that was said and done, the school board voted to, not unanimously, but it was, I think the vote was, 3-4, 3 opposed to 4, 4. It was nearly voted to keep the books, and the books have been in the library ever since. This, meanwhile, by the time this was all said and done, this was almost May. So from October to May, it was a huge drain on my time, because people were, you know, asking me questions about the books. There was a whole phase where they wanted to, the request was made from people involved in the book challenge and people from her church. Could they preview all the new books before they were put out on the shelves? You know, there was just a lot of stuff that went on. Basically, they wanted to, and in the end, school board said, no, we're going to leave the decisions with the professionals. book choices will be made as they always have been made, and the book will stay, at which point there's the last little barb was, well, I don't see why we have two books in the library. It's like she's not even being respectful of decisions, choices, and I open the books, and I have always stamped when the books have been brought into the library. I said, both these books have always been here. Nobody's going behind anyone's back. You know, my issue had been that these people were, a lot of the stuff that was said was inaccurate, and the letter that they wrote to the school board was lifted in large part from a right-wing religious site. It's Parents Against Bad Books in Schools, PABIS, I think is the, it's a website, and it had a form letter, and it was, you know, basically, they didn't, the people that, and there were petitions, it was just, I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not. This is fascinating.
It's hard to explain. I have a three-ring binder full of documentation because it got to the point where the superintendent and principal finally had to say, you know, if you want to come into the library, you actually have to schedule a time, and an MEA representative has to be there because they were saying such, not true things about me and about the school and about the library. So, you know, basically it was for everybody's protection, and it got pretty dicey, got pretty ugly, and in the end, truth and justice won out, you know. Are you still there?
I did, I am, don't think that I'm not listening, Johanna, this is perfect, this is fascinating, this is what we're talking about, so your story, you're not rambling at all.
Well, it's kind of hard to, you know, I have this, you know, document, and I have, like I said, a 3-inch binder that's full, and then another partial one of all the correspondence that went back and forth, and all of the copies of the letters, and actually I have the audio file from the radio program saved in it for a thing. It's really, I've used it actually, there was a school arts, or Montana State Library had a thing on censorship in schools, and so I was part of a panel discussion, and you know, this is, it's not uncommon that schools are faced with book challenges, and it really makes it at the top of your game. You have to be, your learning curve, my learning curve was like straight up, and my ability to deal with people when they're unpleasant and still be respectful and pleasant and respectful of their opinions, I really got to practice that a lot. And that's not a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing at all.
In the time that I was able to work with you, you never seem to have a problem with being able to be respectful and talk kindly to people. So it's funny to hear you say that you had to learn to polish it or whatever, because you just always seem to have it.
You have to. It's one thing to be pleasant to a person, even with minor disagreement. That's not hard. It's hard when somebody makes it personal and personally attacks you and personally attacks your professional abilities and personally plays a drama like this out in the community in which you live.
Yeah.
And develop kind of it's not a pleasant sense of notoriety, and you're going, I'm just trying to do my job, and I'm trying to balance a lot of things. I'm trying to, you know, kids are deserving of the right to read, and just because a person is a minor doesn't mean that they shouldn't have access to information. Now, I wholeheartedly agree that parents have the right to say, I don't want my child reading this, I don't want my child exposed to this. I am always more than willing to work, and actually, if a parent will tell me ahead of time, I've had parents say, you know, I don't want my children reading books on witchcraft, or I don't want my child reading books on guns. I make note of that, and I absolutely do the best I can. And I always have the conversation with the kid, you're choosing something that your parents have told me that they do not want you having. Let me find something else. Let me help you find something else that you find interesting. Your parents are the boss of you, and I can't go around that. The other side of that is I'm not going to tell a kid no until I've been told no by their parents, and I'm certainly not going to pull a whole section of books on health topics because somebody thinks that they're pornographic or offensive or whatever, especially when the book has been well-reviewed and has been written with authority and is current and is pertinent, and kids have indicated they need and want that information. I'm just not going to go there. That is the mountain, you know, there are very few things. That is a mountain I'm willing to die on. That is one of them, one of the very few. There's a lot of things that aren't worth it. To me, that one is worth it.
I think that. Good for you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's perfect. So my last question. I sent you that link about Street Lit. Had you ever heard of Street Lit before?
You know, I had run across the term but really hadn't linked it there. I went online after I read that. That was a really interesting article. And I actually have one of the books, Push, which I will read when I get back. Mm-hmm. Or if I go into school, I'll pull that. I know some of the books that I've gotten lately have gotten, I guess I would call it edgier, although I hadn't noticed a lot of the street lingo, and I don't think I have, what did they call it, urban?
Urban erotica?
Well, it's like the urban language or the big city, and part of that is our geographic area. The kids don't identify so much with that as they maybe do in a bigger city.
Yes.
And so, you know, they see it on TV and they see that kind of gangster lifestyle or gangs and you know, I think they're certainly familiar with it, but it's not something that at least a lot of our kids have a great deal of familiarity with. It's something that's not, you know. So the Street Lit, you know, we have some books that I think in our library approach that or deal with it in a very, a more superficial way.
Uh-huh.
And those books are fairly popular. I'm trying to think of some titles right now. You know, I guess I find overall, not so much the street literature, but just the realistic, the books that are set, like Sarah Dessen, some of her stories. Some of the girls have found them and they just really like them. And, you know, one perspective may be, well, that's such a harsh view of reality, or that's such a harsh view of a young person's life. But it hits a chord with a large number of especially young women, for some reason. And so I indulge that because they're obviously working through stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you get requests for certain literature, or do you find it, put it on the shelves, suggest it to people, and then after suggesting it, they latch onto it?
Both ways. I do get a lot of requests. Kids will read books and they'll say, you know, I found this book at the library, or my mom or my older sister or blah, blah, blah. Could we get this book to the library? Well, I always keep, like what I call, I just keep it in a folder. I call it my shopping list.
Uh-huh.
So I just take names and titles, and then periodically I go through. And then I find the reviews, and I see, you know, how things are going to fit. And if it looks like it's going to be a good fit, it's well reviewed, I get it, because a lot of the stuff is not to my taste. And I know that. I wouldn't expect that it would be. But if it, I will do almost anything to get a kid to read. And that means you have to get stuff that they want, not that you want or not that I think is acceptable or not that I think is you know, something that they should be interested in. If they're not interested in it, it doesn't matter what I think. It's what they want. And so long as I can justify it in my own mind, you know, obviously there is a line, and I know where that line is for me personally as a professional and as a human. I know where that line is, and maybe it would be a different line in a different person.
Uh-huh.
But I'm the professional that's having to make the choices for my library, and I have to live with myself. So there are some things that I just say, you know, you will have other sources for that, the public library or whatever. They don't have the kinds of restrictions that we do being in a school library. And that, you know, there's interlibrary loans. There's lots of ways for you. And I always make sure that the kids, if I can't fulfill their request, I make sure that they know how to get what they want if they want it that badly. But I don't feel that I must get every book that's requested of me. There's some that I just can't go there. They're just so, you know, they're so not helpful, or there's such a sense of degradation, or it's just, you know, I opt out. I didn't answer your question, did I?
No, you did. You answered the base of the question, which is, you did. You don't have street lit other than Push. I would say Push is pretty close to street lit, if not street lit.
Well, it was in the article. It said it was, and I know we have that. We have another one that is one that's called Skin. We have some that are, you know, they're pretty. There's some. You know, we do have stories that deal with things realistically, more like it's shown on TV. Not that that's something that you always want to emulate, but I mean, we do have. There's one book that's called, The Rule of Bone, I think. That was one. And, you know, those kinds of books are not for every kid, but there are some kids, it is the only thing that they've read that they've actually stuck with, that it resonates some chord in them. They like that. And for that very reason is why I try to get new things. You know, I'm not opposed to trying new things. If I read reviews or if I see a book, if I'm out shopping, and it just because it looks edgy doesn't mean I'm going to automatically discount it. There has to be some... It has to, you know, it has to have some message that I think will resonate with some of the kids. And it's we have lots of different kinds of books, so it's not, you know, I'm not building a little library of, but I'm not building a pornographic library or a library of harsh literature for the middle school kids, because, you know, there's only a certain number of kids that really identify with those kinds of books. And yet they are the very kids that sometimes are really hard to find books that they are willing to read. And so I get them. And it's the same thing with not just street lit, but graphic novels. Some of the graphic novels are fairly graphic.
They are, yeah.
But I do have some, because that is, like I said, I will do almost anything to get a kid to read. You gotta hook them.
Yeah.
You gotta give them a little, and you know, and it is just that you have to give them something that's a hook, and they, because it, for one thing, it starts a dialogue. Oh, I like this book, or oh, this book. Do we have any more like this? And what did you like about it? You know, once you can start talking to them about it, you have a better chance of finding something that is similar, or at least has elements that they're going to want to read. It's a tough deal to get middle schoolers to read. Some of them are avid readers, but there's an unfortunate large proportion of middle school kids that reading is not even close to being, I mean, it's barely a blip on their list of things to do, not something that they, you know, something that they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't. I have to make it as painless as possible, I guess, for as many kids as I possibly can.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Huh. Do you have, quick question, do you have the books Boy Toy or Freak Show in your library?
We don't have Freak Show, and I don't think we have Boy Toy. Although that title sounds familiar enough, I'm wondering if I've read stuff about it. I'm pretty sure we don't have Boy Toy. I would have to say no without looking. Those, neither of those are familiar enough for me to say that we have them in our library.
They're both fairly new, and they're both. Freak Show is about a boy. I don't know if he's middle school or high school. I think he's in high school, who likes to dress up in women's clothes, men makeup, and goes to school that way. And so it's about his life, really. And it's more of a funny play as opposed to the dark and dreary that can often come across. And then Boy Toy is about a young boy who was, at 12 years old, was seduced by his 24-year-old teacher, and they ended up having a sexual relationship, and no one knew about it until an incident happened when he was 14 years old with another girl, and then the teacher got put on trial and whatnot. And so the book is about that, and it's fairly graphic when he goes back on his his flashbacks from when he was with the teacher. And I read a review about that from the author, and she said, I think it's a she, I'm not sure. Maybe it's a he. He said that he wanted people to feel what that boy felt so that they could understand him later on when he's going through the difficulties that he was. I think I struggle with that. How much do we want these kids to feel, and why do we want them to feel the reality of something that is so powerful and yet so dangerous at a time in their life when they don't know how to handle it? I don't know if
some kids already are feeling, or they know of. I mean, there is the stuff that they say to each other, the stuff that some of our kids experience is sickening and heartbreaking. And you know, I think any book where you come through, where, I don't know, this Boy Toy book, but it sounds like a process was swallowed, justice was, you know, there was a system in place at some point, this issue was dealt with. I think, you know, that, as icky as his flashbacks were, the benefit to that, to somebody, is, you know, this doesn't have to be a secret. There can be some resolution. There is a place that I can get help.
Okay.
And I think you always want to leave the doors open, because there are kids that come to our school that are sexually abused, that are taken advantage of, and you know, it's not just girls, it's boys too.
Right.
And we know that. And we know, and it may not even be the kid who is involved that's reading the story, but a friend of this kid that reads the story that has, like, oh, wait, this is why he gets so, you know, has such a short fuse, or this is why, maybe this is why he feels so crappy, and gives them the ability to have a discussion with a peer where they might not, you know, they might not have that connection. And I'm not, you know, it isn't edifying. And some of, like I told you in my written, when I wrote to you, there's a lot of stuff that's you know, life can be real messy, it can be real icky, and a lot of times kids aren't prepared for, they don't have the ability to discern what's helpful to them and what's not helpful to them. But it's a process they have to go through, and, you know, if something is going to create an atmosphere of empathy or compassion in another person, I guess I'm inclined to let them have that experience. Books, the written word, it may not be edifying, it may not be beneficial, but reading it is certainly far preferable to living it, especially if you don't have a way to get help. And I think that is the thing about reading, is, you know, it's not such a life-altering activity. Choosing suicide, that's a life-altering activity. But if you read about suicide, as graphic and as painful as it can be, you're not putting an end to a life or a soul that way. And I think a lot of kids struggle with feelings and struggle with the ugliness in their life. And they need to have some way with it, whether it's reading. You know, and I always say, you know, people ask me, why are the books Child Called It so wildly popular in your library? Frankly, I can sum it up as kids want to know that somebody else's worse than theirs. And they want to see, you know, they want to see that you can make it no matter how ugly, or no matter, you know, there is, you have the ability to survive that, and you have the ability to become a person that has a life and can contribute and can find some measure of peace. And that's what we want for all of our kids. We want them to grow into people that have empathy, that have the ability to say, you know, I've experienced that, and it's not for me. Just giving a person exposure to something does not necessarily mean that it's going to be harmful to them.
You know what? Thank you for that. You've made a point that, I mean, this is something that I struggle with, to know when is it okay to let it be, and when is it worth fighting for, and what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, but it should be on the shelf anyway, and what is not appropriate and shouldn't be on the shelf. And how do I, this is the part that I struggle with, how do I marry my beliefs about, how do I marry my beliefs with my profession and the ethical stand that as a librarian I'm supposed to make for the freedom of information and provide information whether or not I find agreement or fault with it.
Well, and see, that's what I said. I told you, it is a razor, razor sharp line, and it can cut. I mean, it can hurt you, and it has, I guess, the potential to not be the best thing for kids. But I'm telling you, you become, a person becomes more knowledgeable, more discerning, more able to say, this works for me, this doesn't work for me, I like this, I don't like this. You have to see the ugly, bad side of things, whether that's bad literature, bad, and it's far more preferable to have it something, even icky, you know, TV shows and stuff, it's better to see it, to read it, than to have first-hand experience of it. Seeing it, reading it, I may find it distasteful, but it gives you the pendulum has got to swing both ways before you know where the middle is and what's good for you, or whether you want to stay on the upper side of that pendulum. You have to see the other side too, and I think that is one of the disagreements I have with people that say, well, you know, it's not helpful, it's not edifying, it's not motivational. Well, no, it's not. But the fact that it isn't doesn't mean it's not without value. You can learn a lot from negative experiences. You can learn a lot from icky stuff too. One would hope that kids would have somebody to talk to, whether it's peers or family or friends. You struggle with it. I've been doing this for a long time, and I still struggle with it. I mean, I don't make these choices lightly, and I have to know in my own mind, I have to say, this is why I have this. This is the benefit, and I think the benefits in this case outweigh any potential, the fact that it's not edifying, the fact that it's not a positive thing.
It's good to be able to talk about this. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It is a tough thing. I don't know of anybody that ever feels 100% comfortable. Even, you know, you see somebody like Nancy Pearl, who has read a gajillion books, who's nothing but an advocate for reading. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, sometimes even she must feel pause at what pauses for literature. And, you know, I guess the trick is, as a person, it's okay to know what our measuring stick is for us individually. It is a grave injustice to use our own measuring stick and say, this is the one size that's going to fit you, too. That's not right. A person can have very strongly held beliefs. If it's not life-threatening or if it's not illegal, the immoral part you got to really watch. But, you know, if it's not any of those things, then it's we have to be very, very careful that we are not using just our own measuring stick. You know, as adults and people that have had a little bit more life experience, and I have to say this, the older I get, sometimes the harder I have, because it is, life is so different now than, you know, and you're like 30 years younger than I am. So, I mean, it's just like, holy Christ, the older I get, the more I go, this wouldn't have, you know, I would never have dreamed of this.
Yep.
When I was their age. And so I need to be careful that I do keep those conversations open with kids and not be judgmental and saying, well, why do you want this? Don't you know this is icky and gross?
Right.
Or this isn't helpful to you. You just have to be really respectful of, I say it to you, I say the heart wants what the heart wants. People are trying their best to sort things out for themselves. And life is so very different. Who am I to say that this is not going to hit a chord with somebody and might, in fact, although I think it's way out there, it might be helpful. And I would hope that if nothing else, it will provide a, like, well, I don't have to do that again.
Right.
Kind of experience, you know. People learn. You know, you can't say, it doesn't take very many experiences. If something doesn't work for somebody, they'll stop. Kids are smarter. You know, are certainly that smart.
That's true. That is very true.
Unless you're talking about addictive behaviors, which is something totally different. And it's in and of itself another whole ball of wax. I know we see kids in school that really have been so exposed to pornographic images that they search for that at school, and we have behaviors that we need to deal with those very seriously, because it's not something that we're going to stop, because it is addiction-based behaviors on their part. So, but, you know, I don't think on this bar as books or reading, I've never heard of a book addict. something that would be so so harmful that you would have to take action. I just don't think it exists. I don't know.
At least not in our libraries.
Not in our libraries. Online, I bet you could find stuff. I mean, I don't think probably anybody needs to know how to build a bomb or how to do stuff like that. But mm-hmm. that information's out there, too. Yeah, it is. And but it's that, you know, that's not the kind of stuff that we're going to have in our school libraries. That's
no.
not the kind of stuff that we're probably even going to have in public libraries. Unless they're specialized.
Exactly.
I don't know.
That's true. Well, I don't know.
I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Too much. My brain hurts from thinking about this now.
Let's stop. Let's stop, and you can go and have a pleasant evening, and let the thought of book challenges leave you.
Okay. Well, you know, I will say, it's not the worst thing that can happen to a person to have a book challenge. It can be pretty darn uncomfortable, not a lot of fun to live through, but in the end, I think you become a better librarian, better able to know where your own, what levels of risk you're willing to accept and what levels are worth fighting for. It defines them for you. You find out pretty quickly where those are. And so it's not a bad thing to have to go through one. It's not a lot of fun, but it's not a bad thing.
Perfect. Thank you.